How is everybody doing today? We have an amazing artist and someone who has been killing it in this space today. Goes by the name of OXT Joe. How you doing today, brother?
Hey, man. I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, T Joe. I've been super excited to do this episode for the simple fact of your art has been everywhere, brother. And in a very great way. I love it. I love seeing it. Anytime I see a piece, I usually know that is a T Joe piece. And I want to ask you, you know, you made a very, very good piece. All your pieces are very good. But a piece that a lot of people should know is your blue piece. You know, you made blue, which is, it reminds me of a Ellsworth Kelly green is what it reminded me of. It was so beautiful. We're going to talk on that, talk on your art style and stuff, talk about how long you've been doing this. So honestly, I'm going to shut up, bro. And I'll start off with the simple question of, when did you actually get started becoming an artist?
All right. Thank you for the introduction. Yeah. I guess first thing I'd say is that although I do put the OX on my socials, I do refer to myself more as just TJO or TJO. I don't feel like any need to qualify the OX as part of my identity, but appreciate the nod to my username. I've been an artist for a number of years now. It started as something that was rather casual and just out of fun, like most people, I guess, actually. I used to be a photographer, film photographer, back up until like 2016, 2017, when I really started getting into it more seriously. But still, it was more, I was more into it for the fun of it. And I was just like searching for interesting composition. And traveling around to take pictures of the mountains. Everything evolved and I started doing TJO on a serious basis 3 years ago, three years ago, or a bit more than that. And that's when I really started taking things extremely serious and trying to actually make what I call like art, like with the big A, in the sense where I started to try to do things with like meaning. It wasn't just like it wasn't just for fun anymore. I was trying to be more precise and have more intent with what I was doing. So, yeah.
Okay. So, and that's crazy. I'm not going to lie. Every time I've ever seen your name on Twitter, I was like, do I just call him T Joe or do I have to add the OX? I was like, man, I really don't.
Bro, it's honestly, it's been like really weird to try to handle that. I've tried to get the usernames, but like there's one guy on like on Instagram, he tried to sell me the TJO username for like a very crazy sum. And I was like, maybe I don't really need to have actually just TJO on my name. I'll just leave that to just to people to kind of figure out on the way. But yeah, whatever, you know, just makes you think about me in a way.
Yeah, man. Nah, it's a dope ass name. I definitely, anytime I see anybody with OX in their name, I always start like breaking down and forgetting how to function. So it's totally on me. But no, it's super sick to hear, you know, you've been doing photography, you've done this, you know, and I just heard the other day, so please clarify this for me if you can. Are your pieces of work that you post on Twitter, are those physicals?
Yeah, so I've been working physically for also for a number of years. Actually, even when I was doing photography, I was really into like film photography. So even that was an analog. I feel like there's something very special about organic materials and just like real life things. And nothing to say against digital. Absolutely, some of my favorite pieces are purely digital from my friends. But I do feel for my personal work that I'm able to tap into things that are more irregular with physical things, and that's something that I really appreciate, like the imperfect perfections or something like that. I really appreciate all the little things that happen when you work with materials that have a life of their own. And yeah, so it's been a lot of fun to work physically.
That blows my mind, honestly, because I forget who I was talking to. I wish I remembered. We were talking about your art. And I was just like, yeah, I think it's absolutely beautiful. Like, it's crazy how we can get those colors. And they were like, yeah, you know, with it being physical. And I was like, it being physical? Like, what do you mean by that? Like, that's not a digital piece? And they was like, nah, bro, you didn't know that? And I was like, no, no clue that that was the actual piece he made. And whenever, I mean, I love digital art too. I do digital, I mean, I make digital art, can't do physical. I'm not that talented. But seeing, going back and looking at your art, it's like I had to step back and look at it from like a different perspective now, knowing that they're physicals. And I just had like so much more appreciation for them because I don't know. I know how much effort goes into stuff like that. And the fact that your stuff did not look like, I don't know. It was just mind blowing how crazy and how dope you were able to make it. So I do want to say big shout out to you on that just for making some absolutely sick art. Did you have any inspirations growing up whenever it came to art or photography?
Yeah, of course. I find it funny that you would go about the not realizing it's physical. I think it's very important not to try and like overdo the roots thing. So every time I do post a pic online is of a piece, it's mostly, sometimes it's modified. I just want the digital version to be the best it can be. So that really comes into the balance where I feel like I don't necessarily need it to be like, you don't need to look at it and think like, oh, this is like physical. Like I just want you to see the piece for what it is. And so that's why I always, sometimes I even like tone down some of like the physical aspects just to not have you, I don't want the first thought to be like, oh, this is physical. Like, I just want you to look at the piece. So sometimes there's that goes into it. But yeah, no, I mean, I've been like, I actually got into photography not even because of the art. I was just, I just asked my father to give me his very old camera that he had for like 40 years. I didn't get into it as like as art in itself because I'm from a very industrial like city, small city and industrial, and like art isn't really something that like kind of happens or like is not like treated as like as a thing here. It's not like, oh, you're gonna become an artist. Like, that's not something that's said here. It's not like, oh, you're gonna make art. Like, it was really 100% more of a hobby thing. When I started picking up photography, I was just inspired to see like when I was growing up, how like aside from working, the only thing my father did was take pictures, and like I was just like, I don't know. I guess it stuck with me, and so I just got like obsessed with taking pictures. And then, you know, it started with like, I guess one of the like the first big photographer that really got to me. I mean, there's a few, but I know there was one from Hong Kong. I can't remember the name, but he does very with very low contrast photography, and it's really cool. It's been a long time since I've looked at these artists, but yeah, I have a bunch of like images in my mind, but I was mostly just like following on the socials at that point. It wasn't really some sort of research things. Like, I wasn't trying to learn like super seriously. I was really just having fun for the most of it and just fucking around with film photography.
Okay. Okay. So that's super interesting. See, this is why I like asking the questions, because I feel like I'm learning stuff that I can't find or I haven't dove deep enough to find out there yet. And this brings me to my next question. You know, you would create Blue, which was a CCO piece, I believe. And whenever you created it, it kind of took Twitter over by storm, bro. Like, everybody made their rendition of it. You know, Blue was everywhere. What was there inspiration behind that? Or was it just something that came to you? I mean, I've always been curious on this as someone who is like a minimalist.
I mean, honestly, like, so I started working with Blue mostly in 2022. I was, when I started TJO, I started TJO at first because the years before that I had slowed down. So 2019, I wasn't really creating anything anymore, and I was in a very dark mental space. I had like very bad pure OCD that were stopping me from living like a normal life. And, you know, I was about to like just flip on myself, but I ended up consulting thanks to my mom. She forced me to go see someone, basically. And from there, I got diagnosed with OCD and put on medication. So I started like thinking like maybe I could try to dissect how I came to this point with art. Like that was in 2020 when I started thinking like that sort of like mindfulness. And in 2022, I was like, I had been like just working on like working with paper and just learning like techniques, you could say, and things like that. And I was just like, now I need to actually like truly make some sort of study out of this, because right now it's kind of all over the place. So that's when I stepped into Blur, which was basically a study of your inner dialogue and inner space. For me, like when I wasn't feeling good and I was trying to understand what was going on inside, I would always come into this like sort of blue space. That's how I saw my deep interior. It was like just deep blue space, because blue is such a endless color. I felt like once I started looking, there was no end to it. And so that's where I started working with blur. And from there, I developed the archetypes, which are energy archetypes. I often get said that they're like evil monsters, but no, like all my characters are actually not bad people or bad persons. They're all archetypes that symbolize a part of me mixed with energy. And so the red for me is the color of energy. And well, for better or for worse, energy is like neither good nor bad, but it's just energy. And I just characterize it as an archetype. And I started these studies, and the more I was going, the more the blur was becoming like this sort of thing that was unaddressed. It was like, it's everywhere and yet it's not talked. Like, it's, what is it? Like I at that time, maybe I wasn't really that close to figuring out what blur meant to me, but I've had a lot of thinking since then. And that's when I somebody was talking to me like, you ever thought about just like what blur meant to you, and what if it was only blur? And that's when I thought to myself, maybe I could try to make a self-portrait that's with just the color blue. And so for like 3 weeks, I would always be painting sometime in the day. This 9x12 inch paper, watercolor paper with blue. So I would just paint blue over and over and over and over again for like 3 weeks. And at the end, I came up with this piece where I was like, damn, I actually feel something looking at this. And I minted it as a joke. Well, not as a joke, but like, I minted it as like a conviction thing. I was like, this means something to me. I'm going to mint it. I don't give a shit. And then like, I was just like, just to fuck with it, I'm just gonna release a CCO, because like, you know, it's a color. Like, I didn't invent this color, but it's more about like just my relationship with it. So I just released that CCO as like more of a joke, and from there, that's when it went completely crazy. But it wasn't like some sort of, like I had no idea doing it that I would release a CCO or anything. I was just like working. I was just like trying to make a self portrait of only one color.
Now, I can't let, whenever the words didn't really mean to, bro, whenever I was like, oh no. So that, I ain't gonna lie, bro, blue is a crazy piece. And for me, I'm really big into minimal artwork. I don't know if you know who the old artist Ellsworth Kelly, but like I said earlier, they made a piece titled Green. And it's exactly what blue is, but green. And yeah,
really? No, I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a piece from 1951. But it is, and the thing is, it's beautiful. Just like how I love blue, I love green. And it's, you know, some people argue, you know, what is art? What is this? What is that? This is what I think is art. This is real art to me. The things that you create draw me in, from the colors to the landscapes that you use in it. Like, I'm looking at a piece on my computer. Hold on, because I cannot pronounce this name. I just want to. The last word is l'oxycodone. So,
yeah, it's le diable aime les cigarettes et l'oxycodone.
Now y'all see why I could not pronounce that. But looking at it, like what you used for that piece, the scene that you used really pulls me in. The red characters. Now, I'm actually glad to learn that you use red as in the way that you do, because whenever I see red, I thought the opposite. I thought that it was maybe a demonic, maybe an evil color. No, not in by what you say, that's not what that represents. So it gives me a whole new feel and look to your pieces now whenever I see them. And I don't think, oh, well, that's an evil character trying to get me or something. Nah, I don't.
Yeah, no. And like, even like it's not even like the way to see them as like distinct characters is also a misconception, in the sense where a lot of people, I don't know if you know the piece I Ate You, which is basically a piece where there's like a woman figure that slaps a rose in the face of a man figure. Well, that wasn't about a conflict between a human woman and a human man. It was actually a conflict between like my femininity and my masculinity, because being brought onto this super industrial background, I'm like, I don't know. I was feeling like, why the fuck am I so stuck in this toxic masculinity thing? Why do I feel like I can't have emotions? And why every time I feel something like vulnerability, I feel guilt, you know? And for me, you know, I wasn't saying I hate you, like in the sense of an external thing. Like the piece was literally about hating that part of myself that takes such a big space in my life. And so, yeah, so then you can maybe put this, the things together where it's not really about people, but really more about like things within myself that I characterize as red archetypes, you know? Yeah. And from there, I'm able to really, you know, try to dissect things that I feel within. Of course, there's instances where, for example, I think the only piece that has some sort of like devilish characteristic is Le Diable aime les cigarettes et l'oxycodone. It's like the only piece where there's actually orange on one of my characters. And to be honest, it is because since I was thinking about the devil while making this piece, I wanted to be there to be a reference to it to some extent. But my work isn't in any way centered around that. And if anything, you know, every day I go further from anything negative regarding the archetypes, because the more I look into myself, the more I feel like the archetypes are everything, like more like protagonists than antagonists. Like they're actually like the living force within myself. And I'm just trying to kind of like get a hold of themselves and be able to orient them in the way where they don't, where I can actually be happy.
Wow. You're blowing me away, TJO. You're blowing me away, because I've always thought that your pieces like have a strong feel to them. And I truly believe that's because of how much you put into your work, how much of yourself you put into the work, which is a great thing in my eyes as a fan of art. But just hearing what goes into your pieces, like I said, I have a whole new respect for your art. I already had a very high level of respect for it. Now it's just like, you know, fucking through the roof. But this, it's interesting, man. I really can't wrap my head around it, because my whole thing with art is being able to tell stories, being able to describe stuff. And whenever I looked at I Hate You, that is what I think is, I see exactly what it is for the day. It looks like a guy being slapped by a rose. But to hear the artist's story on what it truly means, I think that's the fun part about art. That's why you see the common jokes of like people standing in museums in front of an artwork, looking at it for like 30 minutes. Like, what is this? I see something different than the next person. And this is a prime example of, I mean, your work has a lot of substance, speaks volumes, all your pieces. There's a bunch of them. And I'm not going to lie, how do I pronounce the one that's I, capital M-I?
I-M-I.
Now, that one is one of my favorites. I have to say, one of my favorites. And I guess it's right above Monsters Can Love, too. So that little three-piece, one, two, and then both of them together, I think that's probably one of my favorite pieces that you've made, bro. And even that, like, there's just so much.
And I wanted, you know, so that's a good thing. So, you know, I feel like I want to touch on two things that what you said brings up into is like, first of all, before the Blue Rooms, I was seeing art as something where each piece has its own story. So every time I would make a piece, I would think about a beginning, something that happens, and an end within the same thing, right? So that's how I was seeing it. So every like, so before Blue, everything was like kind of disconnected. You know, there were still like the energy characters and some sort of themes going around about mental health, but it wasn't like a research, like the work wasn't a research in itself. It was more of a just like throwing ideas around. But when I found like Blue and when I was able to focus on that purpose, that's when I was able to actually build like something that had like a body, like as a body, as like something that was a continuing study. And I feel that's when I was able to really become powerful with my heart, when I started to really tap into these things. IMI, You and Monsters Can Love Too is like the only piece in, I think, in my portfolio that's people, like that is intended as not energy archetypes, or like one of the only ones. I remember making this piece, it was for the drop with Nifty, and I was kind of in this weird space that I'd gotten out of the long-term relationship, and I was just thinking like, what was the relationship like, what entailed to like the one night relationship, you know, like that one night encounter, what it felt like, but also what it entailed as like from the human psychic part of things. And like, it's sad that it's not on blockchain, but I had done like a very long artwork where it's like with a small poem where it was kind of explaining the context of the pieces. Can't find it now, but it was something exact. It was explaining that like it was about one night only was the part, was the name of the collection. I think it's a Saunders song. Is it? There's some, anyway, I don't want to, but anyway, I was listening to a song that in these themes also during that time. And I don't know, it kind of came around that I was really inspired by that. And that's how I came with the pieces. And, I don't know. I felt like, it was more powerful if I left silhouettes instead of like actual like skin. I felt like silhouettes left place for people to put themselves into their characters, because it was really more about like seeing yourself in that one night context. So, like, how do you feel and like, how do you approach this situation from a human perspective?
Man, just listening to you describe everything, I love this stuff, man. And I'm listening to you on one screen. I got your art pulled up on another. I've been looking at it all morning. It's crazy. I do have to ask, because listening to you speak on it, it makes me curious, you know. So now that whenever you put out these pieces, you know, a lot of people see them, they make their own thoughts, suggestions. What is it like to know that a lot of people truly enjoy your work? Like even the Blue piece, you took that CCO and it looked like everybody made their own piece with it. Was it a cool feeling to know that so many people around you are really big fans of your art?
It's a good question. Like, at first, I didn't really feel exactly positive things from it. It was at a time where it was extremely stressful for me to, like when everything happened, it was extremely stressful for me to handle like Blur and everything. I had to get a therapist and shit, just because it was just too much for me. Maybe it's just because I'm not built like that, but just seeing everything happening online was just too much. It was too overwhelming. So I kind of had to log out and seek help for that. But on the other end, it's really cool to know that like people are starting to really look deeper into the work and to listen to the story, and also to talk about subjects like mental health and stuff like that, which in the end is really what I do it for. Like I'm super happy to have connected with so many people that were able to share their stories with me. I think this is the biggest gift. Like I was able to learn so much about other people and help them in their own struggles. And I feel like that's really something that's meaningful. That's actually something that's bringing more to the table. So I'm really happy for that. But when it comes to the whole like social, like media movements and all of that, I try to not wrap my head too much around that. I feel like it's extremely volatile and maybe a bit like I don't know the word in English, but I'd say like maybe like plasticky, in a sense where it's just like, yes, a lot of attention, but a lot of it is also not so genuine as you'd expect.
Yeah, no, we totally get exactly what you mean, and I agree 100%. Because whenever I see you on Twitter, I wouldn't say you're someone that's like super active, unless I'm just not paying attention. I would say you're more or less someone comes on there, drops their work, does what they need to do, and then just kind of goes about their business. They mind their own business, super humble guy, and you just put the artwork out there whenever you want it. It kind of gives me a Jake Fried vibe. Jake is super talented, but, you know, he does his GM post, and, you know, that's kind of it. He'll post his own artwork, and then, you know, if somebody says something, he'll reply here and there. Just keeping it calm, keeping it easy. But that does bring a good question for me that I want to ask you. Is there anything in this space, and you don't have to name anybody directly or name anything directly if you don't want, but is there anything in this space that you think is just kind of becoming old, or anything in this space that you really like?
I mean, I've met some incredible people in this space for sure, and like, I've met some really great friends. So like, I don't have an overall like bad feeling about my direct circle in this space, because like, I've surrounded myself with like extremely genuine and nice people, and I'm forever grateful for that. Oh, yeah. So definitely that's the first thing I want to say thinking about this. But I have seen some tendencies in what I'm seeing on socials that's, for me, that are sad. Not sad because like, that doesn't have to be about me. Like, that's just like overall, like the way things are. Like, I feel like there is some major, like, very like bad things happening. And I'm gonna develop what I mean by that. We're seeing right now like a forced shallowness on everything. Like, and it's kind of like in line with just the internet in general. But especially recently, we've seen just this oversimplification of ideas and oversimplifications of everything, literally, just take its place and be there at all times. And like everything needs to be a certain format, and everything needs to follow these ideas. And like, we're seeing less and less stories and ideas emerging, and more just like copies and just like random, like shallow things pop off. And I don't think that in itself it's wrong. I just feel like if we keep going that way to too much extent, it makes me think about, you know, that like that line in an anime, Ghost in the Shell, where homogeneity breeds weakness, and like, where we're kind of almost like everything is being turned towards the same fucking thing over and over again. And that overall for the space as in itself, it's bad because it makes it like super weak, because it's so like bland. And like, if it were like, if everyone was throwing in different ideas and trying to research these new things, maybe I'd feel more confident about like the overarching like development of things. I just see like the oversimplification of things and just the homogeneity of what I see online as a weakness more than anything, and growing in the past few months.
I agree. And I think a good word that we might be able to use here is, I think this space is like lacking originality. You know, I've seen a lot of people just follow on the trends of like the next thing. Like, even for example, the open edition thing, you know, there's a lot of people who are doing good with the open edition, and they are getting their art out there to people that really want it at affordable prices. But then you just got people that it's just like, you know, every other day they're doing one out pushing for money, and yo, I'm not here to knock nobody, do what you do. There is times where things seem a little confusing. I wonder if we're still here for the art, or like what we're really here for. So I was very curious to get that from a perspective of someone who has been doing art for a while and I'm sure has no plan to stop doing art anytime soon. But it just makes me want to ask before we jump over to anything else. What do you want out of art? What do you want people to like kind of get out of your pieces? Whenever they see a TJO piece, what is the first thing like you kind of want them to think about?
I mean, you know, like I've always been into like clarifying that, you know, I don't wish to become like some sort of like a mainstream phenomenon or whatnot. You know, like for me, I've always wanted to make my work for the fracture. Like that's always been the point for people that are actually going to understand what I'm trying to say, to see themselves through that art and to be able to stop feeling bad for it. Mostly, you know, like one of the big reasons that my condition got really bad because my mom brought me to my first meeting with a psychiatrist at 8. When I was like 8 years old and I would only see one back when I was 20 was because it was a fucking taboo. Like there wasn't like, I was raised by my father and like mental health wasn't a thing. Like it was like people that work for the government have mental health issues because they have good insurances and it's just a weak thing. You know, you're just trying to gain the things, you know, and he was a very proud person with like his own business. And was like, you know, like it's just being like, it's not real, basically. Right. He was just saying it wasn't the idea that it was not real. So I always thought that I was just fucking invincible. And I did like a bunch of drugs growing up and fucked around enough for it to become a very big, like some, not like to like the craziest extent, but enough to really turn shit into a bad thing for me personally. These problems that probably would have become real problems when I was 40, like developed in the course of 5 years. Once I started really indulging in that. So I after later on learned that my mom was like a 3 times like clinically depressed person on medicine since 15 years and learned all these things. And I feel like if there wasn't such a big taboo around mental health, like so much more could be done, not only as a prevention, but like, there's this really beautiful organization that their motto is to like answer mental health problems before they become a liability to the person that has them, you know? And it's like stage something, but like it's a known fact that, you know, there are ways to actually like, if it was more open and we were talking about it on a more broad scale, we could actually like kind of kill the problem at the source, because like there's evolution to this thing. And if you're conscious enough about what you do and the decisions you make growing up, it can have an enormous effect on how that develops when you're older. So it's like, I guess it's just like trying to just break the taboo, like with whatever I've lived through. And like, if I'm able to share that, is because it shouldn't be a problem sharing it in the first place.
No, man. I think that's, I want to say lovely in the sense of, I think it's beautiful that you can share what you are sharing with us now. I'm not the best with words, so I don't know how exactly to explain what I'm trying to say, but just know that I know speaking on mental health is not easy for everyone. It's not even easy for me because I have trouble still talking about it to this day, and I'm trying to get in a better spot. But there's so, like I said earlier, there's so much substance and meaning behind what you do. Your moves are calculated. And for you to be able to say these things on here, I just think it shows a lot of your character and who you are as a person, that you, I overall feel like you want to help people. The things that you put out are a representation of yourself, just being so strong and trying to share that story. And these are things that I failed to realize about you. I've never gotten the chance to look this deep into your art until this conversation today. So, I mean, for one, thank you so much for even sharing your story. It truly means a lot to me. And I know anyone listening in, it should mean a lot to them that someone could just come on here and be so open And even then, you know, it makes me think of your pieces like Cigarettes and Heartbreaks. I just feel like there's something way deeper, and I could be wrong, but I feel like there's something way deeper to that piece now. Just, I feel like there's more that I should be, I shouldn't just see it as a cigarette burning there. I should try to look deeper into that and see what story it could be telling for you. Is it telling a story, Dino?
Yeah, so of course there's like what I was thinking while I was making the piece, the time I was making it. So the one cigarette that I never finished, a piece that I made like months ago, but that released quite recently, but still it was made like there wasn't any snow outside and it was like super, anyway, it was a long time ago, but still it was really, I was just really interested in the idea of turning objects into something that could like pursue a storyline. And I went with the cigarette because I had most of my really shitty conversations over cigarettes, and I have some of my most beautiful too, but like overall, like it's the extremes. Like there's never a discussion over a cigarette that's like about the fucking weather. It's never happened to me at least. So I was thinking of something that could kind of encapsulate the sort of like just context meant for deeper discussions, I guess you could call a cigarette that, because cigarettes for most cases are like a social kind of thing. You're just trying to socialize. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's a mix of that. And then I wanted to bring in back, you know, like consumerism and just like, you know, a cigarette is also like the perfect vehicle for addiction. Like this is definitely one of the most widespread addiction with alcohol. And, you know, although like, I'm not like directly addicted to cigarette, I am addicted to my antidepressants. So I wanted to kind of loop that in back in, and I'll find a way for it to have its place in like the story that I'm building. And while in the context of the Grails, it had to be a piece that wasn't immediately, like obvious it was made by me. So I wanted to steer away from everything that was too clear, you know? And I think that worked pretty well because it didn't mint out and most people didn't know it was me. They thought it was somebody else.
I mean, every time I hear you talk, it blows me away I feel like I'm learning a lot. You know, whenever I do these episodes and I get the chance to speak to these, to artists that are just, I mean, absolutely phenomenal in my mind and other people. I really try to become, and I have to stop doing this, I try to become a listener more than a host. I forget that it's my responsibility to be asking you the questions. So I'll be sitting back like, damn, this is a good T-Joe conversation. I'm like, oh shit, I'm the one having the convo with T-Joe. Let me jump back to the questions. But you know, it's just interesting to hear everything because there's so much value in this. And I'm trying to look at the art from 100 different ways. How can I like tie myself into it? How did the artist tie themselves into it? And just seeing your pieces, bro, I'm truly blown away. Learning your history, learning who you are. And I have to be 1000% honest, for you to even admit any kind of problems that you have with yourself, for anyone to be able to do that, that is a huge, huge man and or woman that can admit that. Because I feel like that's like the number one thing. I've faced multiple problems. I'm 26 years old and it took me at least 25, 26 years right now to even be able to admit those things. And I know there's people out there that it might take longer. They might realize sooner. But the realization that you have a problem or that you have whatever it is in your life that you're trying to cope with or just live with, or that takes a lot. And for me, it just shows a lot that, you know, you're so open as a person, you're open as an artist. And I mean, I kind of feel like you're wearing your heart on your sleeve, like you're proud of who you are. You're proud of everything you do and you should be. And if I'm getting any of this wrong, T-Joe, just be like, bro, shut up. Well,
no, but like, I guess I just don't like the word proud.
Okay. Okay.
I feel like it's a word in culture that's I feel like it's a touchy word. Let me explain. I feel like, you know, I'm proud of who I've become and like facing all of these things, but like I'm not full of myself.
Yes.
And I think that's a big thing. And I feel like being overly proud is something that's been glorified in like today's culture. And like I feel like not enough people are asking themselves the questions and like just questioning themselves and what they're doing and all of that. So yeah, I definitely feel like, yes, I am proud, but like I am still daily asking myself these questions, important questions, and like putting myself in check. You know, I feel it's really important. And like I just to you know, stay in touch with like real life and like real people, and thankfully I have plenty of that around me, so that's good. But yeah, just don't like just not to get too lost into all of that, what's happening online.
Yeah, 100%. And I like that you kind of clarified what you meant by proud. I guess a good way to word it would be, you're still humble, you're still down to earth, you're not someone that's just totally a big headed, oh, I'm better than you, I'm this great artist, look at all my, yeah, I've never took you as someone like that. And I don't think that's who you are at whatsoever. Not even
no,
close.
But yeah, no, don't worry. That's not what I was saying, but it's just like, it's just because I feel like words are very, like, I don't know, they have inherent, like very powerful things related
Absolutely.
To them. So it's something that I learned with time too. Before I thought like, you know, words have no meaning and it's what you intend. But the more I grow, the more I learn that words themselves have a lot of strength by themselves. And sometimes it needs to be clarified.
Yeah. Great point, bro. That's a great point. So, and on this podcast, we usually do 5 questions towards the end, and we'll get over to that in 1 second. Before we jump over to the 5 questions, I want to ask you, Tejo, you know, we've talked about your artwork. We've talked about what you've done in this space, some inspirations that you've had when you've started. We've kind of went over a lot, and for that, I'm extremely thankful for. Before switching over, is there anything that you want to let the listeners know, or is there any questions that you wish I would have asked you so you would have got the chance to say, oh, you know, this is what I'm doing, this is what's coming up? If so, bro, please let me know.
Well, I guess I'd like just to close something. That's something very, I think it's important to talk about. So Sarah the Shell did a very beautiful tweet like a few months ago. I don't remember exactly when. And it was about, you know, visuals, aesthetics and stuff like that. And, you know, with the advent of AI, I think we're just seeing exactly that. I feel like a lot of people are like extremely stuck on aesthetics. And I feel like, well, that's not the right thing to be looking at, because I feel like it's quite first level empty shit to begin with. I think like we need to stop the aesthetic thing going around and really ask ourselves, like, what is the meaning of this and what is it trying to say? And, you know, like just kind of look deeper into things, because I feel like what really stands out in the end is voices. And like, if you're not looking for people with voices and people who are trying to say something, it's like, it's kind of like just, it's kind of just nothing in the end, you know, like, and like, so yeah, I feel like, you know, that's something that needs to be talked about more in the space where it's not like, I don't know, like, it's not just like a one dimension thing where, you know, like, oh, it's this style, so it's this. And, you know, like, you know, humans have been reinventing their way to visualize things for hundreds of years. And, you know, like nothing is really like innovative in the sense of visuals, but it's always more about how it's tied to the story and what it's trying to say, in my opinion, you know? So yeah, that'd be something I'd like to add.
I mean, so, and let me get this correct. Are you saying people should be looking deeper into what's going on? Like, They should see an artwork and look into that piece rather than just automatically assume that it's one thing or the next.
Yeah, but also from all the perspective of everyone in this space, is just like, you know, like I have like, after when I started being serious, I had all these mini inspiration, like like John Baldessari, Frank Oakenfels, which is an incredible mixed media artist, and also Intan Reva, all these people, Francis Bacon. I even have a list somewhere. Yeah, Tim Walker for photography was an incredible inspiration with the shapes, Kandinsky and Malevich, William Blake for scenery, King Jung-hee for drawing. There's all these things, you know. Even Blur wasn't even inspired for me from something else that was visual. It was inspired by a theater's play that's called Art by Yasmina Reza, which is a theater about two friends arguing because one of the friends bought a white canvas, and one of the other friends is just being a bitch about it because he's like, why would you pay this much for a white canvas? And it's one of my big influences in art, or my perception of the word art, you know, it was that theater play. But yeah, I mean, there's all of these things coming together. But I feel I've just been trying to tell my own story, and that's what sticks out for me. It's just that I'm trying to say something that's proper to myself and my energy and what I am today. And I feel that's something we should be looking more in this space instead of fancy word surrealism and all those things.
Wow. I'm a little blown away. So, you know, as someone in this space, people don't talk about traditional art enough. I feel I'm a huge traditional artist fan. You mentioned people like Wassily Kandinsky, and who would be a huge part of abstract. And then the piece that you were just talking about, the white painting. So I know there's two really famous white paintings. One of them being, is it Malevich? Is the last name on it, I believe.
Well, I think Malevich was very famous for the black square.
Yeah, he has a white on white as well, though.
Okay, but in the context of the theater play, it's not particularly to a one piece. It's a modern piece that's oil strokes on a white canvas. Mm-hmm. And it's not purely white. It's not just a canvas with nothing. There's paint on it. And you know, it just tells more... It's more a discussion about the idea behind art and also what it means for the people that own it. Mostly, it's more a commentary of that. So, for that, there's no reference. It's in the idea of somewhat upcoming modern artist made a white painting, and now it's in my. I'm really happy that it's in my house. But my friend's like, bro, why would you ever buy this? That's a fucking white painting. And then it's a whole discussion about how it made him feel and all of that. So, yeah, absolutely. Something that reminded me of this, and I was really happy to see, was a polar bear in a snowstorm by Grant Ewan. And then that piece was taken back by one of my friend Crow, who did a polar bear in a snowstorm scene in a cart of a train. And you know, it's just this idea of what do you see even with something as simple as an empty canvas? And I, because it's not empty in the end, there's constantly something there. So yeah, absolutely, love all of those things.
Yeah, and my big thing was, you know, I put out a 101 yesterday, and it's basically the same. Almost, I don't want to say the same as the Kazimir Malevich piece of the white on white, which is what we were just talking about. But it's paying big homage to it. I'm a very big minimalist, abstract, you know, Frank Stella, Ellsworth Kelly. That's why whenever I seen your blue piece, I didn't think that it came from an Ellsworth Kelly standpoint, but it was very simple to me. Simple, but yet a lot of stuff going on. And the color blue itself is just so, so fucking powerful to me. But I don't want to hold you up, T-Jo. You know, we've been going literally for 50 minutes now, so we can end the hour out on these last five questions, if you don't mind, bro.
Yeah, of course. Go for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So these are all super simple. You can answer with your... what's actually going on in real life. No, these are not personal. Or you can answer with a Web3 answer. And that's kind of just like the first one, which is, what is your goal in 2023. It could be what is your personal goal or like what is your Web3 goal. Totally up to you, bro.
I guess I don't know, man. I have a bunch of like small goals, but I don't have like a big overarching goals. I just want to finish the pieces I plan to do. I just want to be able to finish the projects I've started, which that's like quite a few, but that'd be incredible. Just art.
Oh, dope. Yeah, definitely want to see what you're working on, what you got coming up. So knowing that, you know, in 2023, we might see some more Tejo art, bro. I'm happy for that. number two would be, without giving away anything current, if you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be? And you can always say, skip, I don't want to answer that.
No, but I can say it. It's where I live now. You know, it's a very small city, but it's where I grew up. I have some great friends here. And I'm still close to very real people and people, you know, that nothing with like social media and stuff, like really just like day to day and real conversations. And like, I don't know, I feel like it's so real here. Like everything is so real. And I really appreciate that, you know, and just being close to the downtown. I also get to see some less beautiful parts of life, but that are real parts of society. And I'm like really happy to. It's just still, it kind of keeps me in, you know, like it's kind of my luck into like not like into like staying grounded. It's like that I'm in this place that's like has nothing to do with everything that's going online.
Hell yeah. Of course, I'm not going to say any names, but seems like a very beautiful place, brother. I'm in Kentucky myself. For those listening in, for those that don't know, I'm in Louisville, Kentucky. If you're here, come holler at your boy. But I feel like that's kind of, I don't want to say the same of where you're at, but I feel like versus living in somewhere like New York, Miami, LA, like the major big cities, like we don't have none of that here. So it's more like, I feel like I'm around real people. Like I'm around real stuff. Like I'm not just on the go 24/7. Like I'm living a real life. So yeah, you know, that's just me. I do want to ask you for number three though, what is Tejo's biggest pet peeve, if you have one?
That's the third pet peeve, dude. I need to look at this stuff on the internet. I don't even know what.
Oh, okay, means. Okay. So what annoys you the most? Like, what is a personal annoyance? Like me, I hate when people chew with their mouth open. Whenever they're eating food and chewing with their mouth open, it's like, ah, that's annoying to me. It's just something that might irk you or might annoy you personally.
Oh, I don't know. I guess I have a few. But I guess one of my it's all related to like on like media. It's like when people ask me for like when I'm dropping an open edition, I really get tweaking. I start really freaking out. Like, but not freaking out. But I'm just like, I can't believe. You're still asking me for this. I've told it so many times that it's not happening. Please let me die in peace with no open editions. So I don't want to make him. But yeah, I guess that would be my.
That answer. Is a perfect answer, bro. And that's literally that is perfect. That is a pet peeve. If you're listening to this, anyone, stop asking Tejo for the open editions. jokingly, yes. But in all serious, yo, like I do want to say, you know, there's a lot of artists out there, you know, if they want to do one, they'll do one. If they don't want to do one, they're not going to do one. Like you're not going to like force them into making one, bro. It's just not how this works. People wasn't walking up to Basquiat, you know, constantly tugging on his shirt saying, yo, can you come make this? Can you come make this? Can you come make this? That's just not really how the art world works. It's not how people work. And it's annoying as hell, honestly. Yeah. So, yeah, let's kind of lay back on that. I've seen it going on with a lot of artists, not just Tejo. Anybody that's – it is what it is. People just want a Tejo edition so they can make money. That's not what he's really about. He's a super humble guy. You know, let him work. He's trying to put out good work for y'all, you know? Number four, and we only have two more left. So number four is, what do people misunderstand about you most? Or what do you think they misunderstand about you most?
I feel like people still don't necessarily look at why I'm doing this. Like, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel, and I'm not trying to be the first person to do anything, and or just like I'm literally just trying to tell my story, and I make all this art for myself first.
Yeah.
And I don't have like I'm not trying to be the like I'm literally just making the art, and I'm not thinking about being the next whatever you're making out this to be. Like, I'm just trying to be me, Tijo. That's all I want to be. And I'm focused, I'm laser focused on being able to make all these ideas come to life. So I have all these pieces and all these projects I'm working on, but like, I don't know. I hate the fact that although it's kind of natural, it's like of being kind of enterprise or like treated as like this brand that always has to grow and grow and grow. Like, that's not my goal. I'm not trying to grow and grow and grow. I'm trying just to make the best art possible with telling my story the best possible way I can.
Bro, I love that. I feel like you're doing a pretty damn good job of it. And I feel like as we continue to go forward, not only with Web3, but just life in general, I definitely think that you'll continue to be on that path. More people will realize what's going on. And I kind of encourage everyone, whenever you're looking at art, look a little deeper, kind of look into the reason why people are doing this. You never know, like, this could really be something for some people. And a lot of people, I know it is. Even myself, I try to use art as a way to really express myself. And there's times where I can't say the stuff with words, or I can't put how I'm feeling out there. I can only do that in colors and shapes. So, yeah, man, that's a big one for me. We're going to finish it on this last one. More of a fun question. If you won $10 million tomorrow, do you think you know what you would spend it on?
What?
My fault. If you won $10 million, what do you think you know what you would spend it on if you won $10 million tomorrow?
That's too much, dude. That's just too much.
I feel you.
Honestly, I there's literally, you know, I don't really want anything that would demand that much money. I guess I would probably donate a bunch of it if tomorrow you airdrop me that much. I'm definitely gonna donate a bunch of it.
Wow.
Because like, that's just, what the fuck, dude? That's $10 million. Like, that's just too much money for one person. but I guess maybe something I would do is I would buy property. You know, it's something I'm conscious. One day I need to own something that's like in physical, like a whole. Like, sometimes I think about this, I'm like, I need to make the adult move and buy like a little small home. So I guess I would try to do that. But aside from that, honestly, I don't know. Like, that must be like a 1,000 year of art supply and 1,000 year of food. That's a lot of resources for just one guy.
To hear the opposite of that, and to hear, I'm sorry, my freaking mic just cut out on me. It's so crazy because I have so many people that can answer that question so quick and tell me exactly what they'll do with $10 million in under 30 seconds. And you were the first person to kind of go opposite of that and say, bro, that's a lot of money. I really don't. I'm going to do what I can with it. But other than that, I mean, that's a lot of money. And I think people don't realize it is a lot of money.
It is. It's a lot. And like, even right now, I'm thinking like of like, you know, I'm budgeting these projects where I need to hire teams and stuff. And so I'm getting used to having like to just appropriate a lot of like these funds for teams for to be able to finish these projects. And even then, that's still like a fucking crazy number for me. Like, there's, that's too many zeros. Like you can like make a you can build a botanical garden with art in it with that much money. Like, that's a different sort of wealth that I'm that doesn't really appeal to me too much. That doesn't really appeal to
you
me.
Know it. In all you know, it's a high number whenever you think about it, and you're like, yeah, I don't even know if I can, if I really want to count to that number. Like, if I can't, if I can't count to the number within an hour or something, I it's probably too much for me, you know?
And like, but I mean, like, you know, I don't like, I, you know, it's like, I, still, you know, I don't want to sound like so fucking like, obviously, like, I don't think I would like say no to it. You know, I don't want to be like some sort of like Dalai Lama. I'm not trying to act like I'm some fucking prophet or whatever, but like, it's just like, it's too big a number to even think like in a split seconds what could be done with that. I think an extreme amount of things could be done with that much
absolutely
money for a lot of good
absolutely
things.
Well, T-Jo, I do want to say thank you, bro. That's the end of the podcast. That's the end of the episode. Now, if you can, please just stick around for 1 second after we end this, just so it can upload on your side. Everyone listening in, I just want to say thank you so much. This was a very big episode to me. Because I hold T-Jo very high in the sense of I feel like he makes great art. I feel like he is a true artist. I feel like he is someone that is doing what he believes, what he loves, and for the correct reasons. He's not someone out here driven by just money. You just heard in his last answer, $10 million is literally, he wouldn't even know what to do with that off the top. Like, that's a surprising amount of money. And I've said before, there's people that come on here and they can tell you in 10 seconds flat what they are going to do with that money, and they don't even have it yet. So that right there speaks volumes to me. T-Jo, I thank you so much for coming on, giving us a moment of your time. I know you're a very busy person, probably putting out all this amazing content. So is there anything that you want to say to the people listening before we go?
Well, I guess I just say take care of yourself and of the things that are really valuable for you. And I think that's, and I'm not talking about like charts and stuff. I'm talking about like people around you and your health and, you know, the really important stuff that, you know, you can't find in the streets or whatnot, you know, just take care of that.
No, that's the most real answer I've ever heard in my life. I've ever got on this podcast. It means the world to me. Me and you spoke briefly before this about some things, and just know that it means the world to me, bro. For those listening in, I thank you again. Definitely keep tuning in. We have a bunch of amazing artists coming on, and I really just want to share their story, who they are, just like how we did today with T-Jo. So thank you all again for listening. T-Jo, thank you for being here, and I will see you all next week. Peace out, everybody.